Hello and welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more chapters from Smells Like Pirates by Susan Selfors, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles from some newsletters and magazines. Our first reading today comes from Smells Like Pirates by Susan Selfors, and in the last chapters we learned that the crew had headed out in their submarine to find Smeller's treasure. Excitement coupled with adventure took over Hercules, Homer, Lorelei, and even Dog. Chapter 27, The Treasure Queen. Madame la Directrice stood in the Museum of Natural History's Grand Hall, her upper lip curled with contempt. She'd taken the basement elevator to the main floor. There was no reason for her to crawl through the spider-filled tunnel like some kind of rat. She deserved better than that. I used to rule this place, she thought. It would be nothing without me. Morning visitors strolled through the lobby, museum maps in hand. They gazed in wonder that the Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton that they reached halfway to the vaulted ceiling. They gawked at the mammoth that stood near the grand stairway and the glass-encased giant squid that spanned the length of a wall. Ticket takers, cashiers, museum guides busily went about their duties. Not a single employee paid any attention to the woman in the professional treasure-hunting gear who stood beneath the pterodactyl, her face hidden in the shadows of her Panama hat. I was your boss. I was your queen, she thought. A man walked past. His name tag read, Mr. Wood, Museum Director. Madam's foot darted out. Brochures tumbled from Mr. Wood's hands as he landed on the marble floor. His glasses flew across the room and shattered against the Tyrannosaurus thigh bone. How dare he try to take my place? Then, without an apology, she stepped over Mr. Wood and walked out of the museum's front door. As she strode down the sidewalk, she tried to make sense of her current situation. The girl had followed directions, had stolen the map from Homer Pudding's house. The girl had continued to follow directions by agreeing to work with Gertrude and Torch. Everything was up to that point, correct. But why would the girl hand the map over to Gertrude and Torch? That made no sense. She was supposed to keep it safe until Madam arrived. It was possible that the girl was a simple creature, without much intelligence, yet she'd arrived on the streets for many years, and she was able to survive, so she wasn't stupid. She was up to something. But what? There was no doubt what the Pudding Kid was up to. He wanted the map back. What if he'd told the other lost members about the lair's existence? They'd swarm the place like locusts. Madam couldn't go back there. It would be too risky. She'd have to find a new place to live. As soon as she got her hands on Rumpold's treasure, she'd move far away from the city, maybe to a tropical island where she could work on her tran. Why not buy an entire island? Then she could do whatever she wanted. Madam crossed Main Street, turned into Success Street as a police car drove past. She didn't miss a beat of her determined steps. She'd already outsmarted them. A stack of newspapers sat on the sidewalk, the paperboy shouting, "Escaped prisoner on the loose! Read all about it!" Madam kicked the stack over as she hurried by. It was not much farther until she reached the marina where Gertrude's yacht was moored and where Torch was trying to piece together the map. Madam's fingers wiggled with anticipation. Finally, after all this time, the map would be hers, and as soon as she found the treasure, Lost would beg her to come back. They'd beg her to be their leader, and she'd laugh in their faces. "I don't need you." She'd then give herself a new name, the Treasure Queen. As the Treasure Queen, Madam would rule the treasure-hunting world. From her throne on her private island, she would plan future quests. She would employ an army of minions, ruthless men and women who cared not for international law or treaties, who would stop at nothing to collect the desired treasures and bring them back to their queen. A film company would make a movie about her, and then a television series, and everyone would be jealous of her riches, power, and fame. She'd license the rights to Treasure Queen action figures and bobble-headed dolls, maybe start a Treasure Queen clothing line. The train station loomed on the other side of the street. Madame wouldn't have given the building a second glance had it not been for the man sitting on the bench just outside the station's main entrance. The man's feet reached halfway to the other side. He had a telescope tucked under his arm and a plaid suitcase beneath his feet. Madame stopped so abruptly that she nearly caused a pedestrian collision. Angus MacDougall hadn't been seen in public in more than a decade. He was supposed to be in hiding. Why would he be in the city? Angus? She hollered. Angus MacDougall, who'd been reading the train schedule, looked across the traffic and spotted Madame. He mumbled something, slid off the bench, and hurried into the station. Madame la Directeur gave chase, running against the traffic light and darting between the taxis. "Out of my way!" she ordered, pushing people aside as she entered the building. A cacophony bounced off the brick walls. Trains whistled, espresso machines steamed. A loudspeaker announced arrivals and departures. Where was he? She cut through a line at the ticket booth, stepping on the little boy's foot and elbowing an old lady in the process. Then she spotted him. He was about to board a train. Picking up speed, she reached out just in time to grab the telescope from beneath his arm. Angus whipped around, his red braid soaring. Give it back! Not until you tell me what you're doing here. That's none of your business, he said. He stepped toward her, his eyes blazing. Then he pointed to a newspaper kiosk. The police are looking for you. Give it back or you'll make a fuss. She stepped away, her grip tightening on the telescope. Then she stepped close to a track and held the telescope over it. I'll drop it, Madame threatened. Tell me what you're doing here, or I'll drop it and it will break into pieces. Angus took a sharp, worried breath. You always have been a troublemaker, and I was glad when they kicked you out of Lost. I never liked you, never. Well, you're always a strange little man, and I've never liked you either. She narrowed her eyes. But you're a hermit, and hermits don't like cities. What are you doing here? Tell me. I'm a-going away. Those kids found me, and I don't know. I don't care about those kids and their map. Kids? Madame raised her eyebrows. Map? I didn't care about it, and I'm going to far where no one will bother me, where I can watch the stars and the peace. He skirted around her and tried to grab the telescope, but she simply held her arm higher. Did one of the kids have pink hair? He nodded. And did the other kid look like he'd eaten too much birthday cake? He nodded again. And was there a dog? Aye, a wee basset hound. Madame couldn't believe her luck. Fortune, who'd been ignoring her lately, was smiling upon her once again. Had she not run into Angus, she would have wasted time with Torch, putting together a map that was obviously a fake. That Lorelei girl had proven to be a master of deceit. She'd distracted Torch, and she'd distracted Gertrude by creating a forgery, all the while keeping the real map for herself. Perhaps the girl deserved a second chance. Such deception was admirable. She might make a good minion for the Treasure Queen. But not that boy. Homer Pudding still had to go. Tell me about the map, Madame la Directeur insisted. Angus MacDougall grunted, then folded his arms and glared at her from beneath his bushy eyebrows. It was a celestial map, he said. I read it for them. A celestial map? Yes, of course. Rumpold Smeller was a pirate, a man of the seven seas. It made perfect sense that he'd chart his buried treasure by the stars. You calculated the coordinates? Aye. With an amused smile, Madame la Directeur relaxed her arm and held the telescope in front of Agnes's reddened face. I'll make you an offer. The telescope for the map's coordinates. Do we have a deal? All aboard, a conductor yelled. Last call for the train to Nome. All aboard. I bet the stars are beautiful in Nome, Madame said. But how will you watch them without your beloved telescope? Angus glanced nervously over his shoulder. Then he wrapped his hands around the lens and gave Madame the coordinates. Are you certain that they are correct? She added, leaning over so that their noses were nearly touching. Because if I find out you were wrong, and that they were wrong. And she left it go at that. Didn't insult me, woman, Angry spit flew from Angus's lips. I know the stars better than anyone else in this world. Of course I give you the correct coordinates. She released her grip, and he reclaimed his telescope. Then he scurried past the conductor and climbed onto the train. A blanket of steam surrounded Madame as she stood on the platform. The treasure was almost hers. Chapter 28. Jellyfish Traffic Jam. Despite their progress across the ocean, Lorelei's mood remained gloomy. Her pale, frowning face reminded Homer of Zelda, who was always draped in sadness. It's a well-known fact that if you spend too much time with someone who's sad, you start to feel sad, too. The sadness floats around and gets in your hair and on your face, then it seeps into your thoughts. So Homer tried to keep his brain busy by studying the console's buttons and gadgets. At least his toxic rash was all better. It was Lorelei's turn to sleep, so Homer took the watch on the pilot's seat. The problem with traveling at hyperspeed was that sightseeing was a bit difficult, even with the headlight beam on high. The submarine zipped through the water so fast, Homer couldn't get a good look at the ocean life. And just like a car traveling down the highway, collecting bugs on its windshield, the sub's observation window collected jellyfish. Poor jellyfish. Unlike fish, they couldn't swim out of the way. Splat! Splat! Ooh, there's another one, Homer said, as the tentacle creature slid down the glass. Too bad this thing isn't powered by jellyfish guts. Hercules sat next to Homer in a co-pilot's seat with Rumpold's map draped across his lap. This riddle still doesn't make much sense. Twins of flame above and below, an endless mirror between. In heavenly eyes the stars do shine. Behind saliva hides what you seek. Some of it makes sense. We know it's the Draco constellation. So the dragon has heavenly eyes, right? In heavenly eyes, the stars do shine. We figured out that line. Yeah, that makes sense. Homer cringed as another jellyfish hit the windshield, leaving a gooey smudge on the size of a pillow. Wow, that was the biggest one yet. I never knew they could get that big. What about the other lines? Hercules asked, his gaze focused on the map. What about the first line, Twins of Flame? Well, Homer paused. He'd never had much luck with games involving wordplay. On stormy nights back on the goat farm, when the power went out, the Scrabble board usually made an appearance. His sister, Gwendolyn, always won because she used mysterious scientific words. If anyone challenged and said, Gwendolyn, Nerftal isn't a word, Gwendolyn would say, of course it's a word. It's a word all taxidermists know. And then she'd end up on a triple word square, and her score would soar. Just once Homer had tried to cheat. Yibigzgrg is a word of all mapmakers. But Gwendolyn had a hissy fit, and Homer had to change his word to burp. Gwendolyn won. Homer read the riddle again. While, let's see. Dragons breathe fire, so that might be the flame part. Twins of flame above and below. So we know that there's a dragon in the sky, and if the dragon has a twin, then it must be a dragon on land. Well, it can't be a real dragon. Dragons are mythical creatures, said Hercules. So it must be something like a dragon statue, or maybe something shaped like a dragon. We won't know until we get there, Lorelei mumbled sleepily. How long had she been awake? Dog rolled over and stuck his legs in the air, presenting his belly for scratching. Lorelei, who was lying next to Dog, ignored him. Dog got to his feet and nudged Lorelei with his nose, but still she ignored him. The boys shared a long, helpless look. Was Lorelei going to be in this sad mood for the entire quest? Hercules folded the map and set it on the console. I have an idea. Maybe we should have a funeral for Daisy. It was the first time anyone had mentioned the rat by name since Homer had delivered the bad news. Really? Lorelei pushed her bangs from her swollen eyes and looked up at the boys. Sure, Hercules said. Why not? It might make you feel better if we do something like that. Would a funeral make Lorelei feel better? Homer wasn't sure. Lord Mockingbird's had been pretty weird, but it was also the only funeral Homer had ever attended. At this point, he'd do anything to get Lorelei to stop moping. They needed her to help with the riddle. But she's not here. We can't bury her. Well, that doesn't matter, Hercules said. We can use the funeral to remember Daisy. Homer checked the autopilot setting. According to the blinking black dot, they'd crossed the halfway point and were still on course. Splat! A yellow jellyfish hit the windshield. Homer wanted to holler, "Look at that one!" because it was the size of two pillows. But given that they were about to hold a funeral, he thought it best to restrain his amazement. Everyone, including Dog, sat in a circle on the submarine's cold floor. "Well, what do we do now?" Homer asked. "Well, maybe Lorelei could tell us how she met Daisy," Hercules said. "Okay." A little sparkle lit up in Lorelei's eyes as the memory drifted to the surface. "I was living behind the utility closet at the soap warehouse. Lots of people used to dump their garbage out in the alley, and sometimes it was pretty good stuff. I had my eye on a sofa cushion, but when I went to get it, I found a family of rats living in it. A mom and her five new babies. They were so cute." Homer shuddered. He'd seen newborn rats back on the farm, pink, hairless, and squirmy, like overhead maggots. "Cute? That isn't a word I'd choose." "I left the couch cushion in the alley so the mother rat could take care of her babies. But a week later, someone came and took the cushion away. I felt so sad, wondering what had happened to the rat family. Then I saw something moving in the shadows. One of the baby rats lay on the bricks shivering. She must have fallen out of the cushion. I carried her inside and fed her some soup. She became my rat."
"Well, why'd you name her Daisy?" Hercules asked.
"Because most people think rats are ugly, but I thought she was beautiful, like a flower." "That's a misnomer," Hercules said. "A misnomer is when you call something the opposite of what it is, like when you name a pig Perfume, or when you name a turtle Speedy." "Daisy wasn't a misnomer," Lorelei said with a pout. "She was beautiful."
"Your turn," Hercules told Homer. Homer frowned. What was he supposed to say?
Well, I remember when I first met Daisy at the soup warehouse. What else could he have said? The rat had stared at Homer with her beady eyes, black nose, and twitchy whiskers. Honestly, she'd given him the creeps. She was a nice rat. Hercules elbowed Homer. "Keep talking," he whispered. Lorelei flared her nostrils and looked at Homer, waiting for some sort of story. Homer cleared his throat.
"I remember how she stole my Galileo compass when I was trying to sneak into the lair, and how she stole the silver spoon from Ajitaba's cook. But when they were in the tower, I remember she did something else." And he wasn't sure if this was the kind of story Lorelei wanted to hear, but she suddenly smiled, so she kept going. "And how she got into the cave and Mushroom Island and stole those harmonic crystals. She was a brilliant thief," Lorelei said, like a proud mother. "I didn't need to teach her anything. She was a natural." Feeling like he'd done his job, Homer elbowed Hercules.
"Your turn."
"Well, I didn't spend much time with Daisy, but I do know that the word rat comes from rait, which is an old English term, and the word rodent comes from rodere, which is a Latin term meaning to gnaw." "She was good at gnawing," Lorelei said. "Funerals usually end with something being said about, you know, resting in peace or something like that," Hercules said. So they all said it together, "Rest in peace." And that's all it took, just a bit of talking to cheer Lorelei up. "I still miss her, but I do feel a little better." And she turned and gave Dog a hug. So they sat for a while, the hum of the battery the only sound. Dog stayed close to Lorelei as if he sensed that she needed something warm and furry to hold on to. But then the mood was broken by a loud splat. Gigantic yellow globs bombarded the windows. "Yuck!" Lorelei said. "It looks like it's raining boogers." The next jellyfish to hit was a whopper, and the impact sent a vibration throughout the sub. The gold name plaque trembled, then slid down the wall and landed on the floor at Homer's feet. He grabbed it. "I hate that this is called La Madame," Homer said. "Madame used this submarine to double-cross my uncle, and then she stole it from him. She doesn't deserve to have her name on it." "I remember reading the report when I became the official record keeper for Lost. I had to put all the files in order. The last record keeper never alphabetized anything. He simply shoved the documents in wherever there was room. It was a total disaster. I created a system based only on the alphabet, but also Latin prefixes. For instance..." "Never mind all that. Tell us about the report," Lorelei interrupted. All right. Let's see if I can remember. The report was called The Unforgivable Treacheries of Madame la Directrice. I didn't file it under T for the, because I think it's best not to do that. So many things begin with the, and the T file was bulging, so I filed it under un, since it's the prefix for unforgivable, and you're going to drive me crazy, Lorelei blurted out, her sadness dissolving by the moment. We don't care about the filing system, just tell us about the report. So Hercules did. He remembered at best he could, and here's what he said. The unforgivable treacheries of Madame la Directrice, submitted by Lord Mockingbird the 18th following an interview with Drake Horatio Pudding, witness to the horrid event. Let it be known that Madame la Directrice did break the solemn vow she made to the Society of Legends, Objects, Secrets, and Treasures. The dastardly deed occurred as follows. Madame la Directrice accepted a position as questing partner alongside Drake Horatio Pudding in a Lost-sponsored quest to find the sunken remains of the HMS Bombastic. Drake offered the use of his brand-spanking-new submarine, La Madame. Upon finding the Bombastic's remains, Madame manned the submarine. While Drake explored the wreckage at great risk to his life, Drake searched the ship's quarters, including the captain's, where he discovered the captain's chest. Take heed, for what follows is undeniably dastardly. As Drake carried the chest back to the submarine, Madame attacked him with the submarine's robotic arms. Drake fought valiantly, but was no match for the mental demons. The captain's chest was ripped from his grip, his oxygen tank nearly emptied. He watched in agony as the robotic arms and the captain's chest disappeared into the submarine. Madame la Directrice piloted the submarine to an unknown location, leaving Drake to drown. She later sold the chest's contents on the black market. That's how I remember it, Hercules said. You've got to have a good memory to be a word spelling bee champion. Robotic arms? This submarine has robotic arms? I wonder what was in the captain's chest, Hercules said. Some people thought the captain's chest contained Rumpelstiltskin's treasure, Homer answered. He knew all of the details from reading the biography of Rumpelstiltskin. The owner of the chest was Captain Ignatius Conrad. He was the last person to see Rumpold alive. He made Rumpold walk the plank, and then Rumpold drowned, or got eaten by sharks, or maybe both. No one actually knows. Well, I'm going to rename the sub. I'm going to call it the Drake. You can't do that. It's mine now, Lorelei said. Everything from the lair belongs to me. Finders, keepers, but. The submarine shuddered, and the battery began to whine like an angry housefly. The whining rose an octave, and dogs started to howl. What's going on? Homer and Hercules scrambled to their feet, rushed to the console. The battery light blinked red. We've stopped. How come we've stopped? Ow! 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 Dog cried, throwing his head back as the battery whined. I think it's the jellyfish, Homer shouted above the noise. There are too many of them. They're pushing against us. Gelatinous yellow and white blobs now covered the entire window. It's like we're trying to drive through a bowl of jello. The propeller isn't going strong enough. It just can't work. Then the battery went silent. The submarine shuddered to a stop. The headlights dimmed, and everything went dark. Said dog. And that's the end of chapter 28. Next week we'll start with chapter 29, Captain Conrad's Chest. In the book, Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors. And now we'll turn to teaching your dog to ask to go out. Communication is vital to any relationship, so it could be really helpful for our pets if they could talk. If they could tell us what they wanted, it would take the guesswork out of establishing routines, right? Well, good news! Teaching your dog to ask to go out is possible through training. Signs your dog wants to go out? Before diving into training, your dog know that they may already be telling you what they need to do to go out. Keep an eye out for the following signs. Sniffing and circling the area. Whining, pacing, and fidgeting. Developing a routine for your dog's potty breaks will help alleviate the uncertainty. If your dog is still soiling inside, proper house training steps should be taken first. Creating a pattern for feeding and going outside will help them get into a routine. This prevents them from relieving themselves in your house. Reward them for going outside with affirmations and treats immediately when they are finished to condition the act. Similar tactics are used to train them to tell you they need to go out. This information all came from Teaching Your Dog to Ask to Go Out, written by WebMD editorial contributors. Well, we've come to the end of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.